Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's get to Seahawks. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson. And here's what I'm so annoyed about. I'm bringing you on to talk about the Seahawks to get some behind-the-scenes insight into what Virginia Mason Athletic Center feels like with a new head coach. We know the basketball hoop is gone. We know there are guys there working out, so we'll get a little bit of a roster update from you. But unfortunately, my co-host wants to talk.
Yes, I'll take it over from here. I'll take it over from here. Brady, here welcome to the greatest week of golf, man. How are you doing today, man?
Well, did you say the Masters? Did that start? Is that today? I had no idea.
Don't you mess with my
heart. I wish we had a record scratch.
How are you feeling about the Masters year? And do you like that a golfer by the name of Malnati is playing with the neon ball out there? Never seen that in Augusta.
Yeah, so Peter Malnati, he's the guy with the bucket hat who just won for the first time on tour a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that neither one of those would be my choice, either a bucket hat or a neon ball, but... One of us is playing in the Masters right now, and the other one is talking about it while watching it, so I guess I can't hate on the guy all that much.
Okay, Matt, I'm last done.
One. Can I get one more? Can I get one more, Stacey?
Fine.
Thank you.
Matt, we're not done.
Odds that Tiger Woods actually finishes the tournament.
Yeah, that's the question. It's not like odds he wins it. Is he going to finish it? Just because, you know, we've seen him, you know, tees it up rarely nowadays, and then he doesn't even finish, and... yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's probably like 50-50 just because it's all dependent on his back. And then, you know, the weather plays into that. He talks about how he needs it to be hot and humid because he just gets stiff otherwise. So, the odds of him finishing it, you probably have to put it at 50-50. And that's either, you know, having to bow out or not even making the cut. I'd love to see him win. Don't get me wrong. All right. He's not a guy that I put any money on just because the odds are very much against.
Okay.
There we go. The segment can start now.
We need a podcast.
We're back to the NFL and back to the Seahawks. ESPN's Brady Henderson joining us. Let's talk about not having a basketball hoop. Brady, this is surprisingly, or maybe not so, one of the bigger stories to come from this. And I think it's only a story because people are wondering, including myself, you know, if it's symbolic of a bigger culture change within the building. What did players have to say about the hoop not being there? And what's their early impression so far of McDonald and his kind of attitude or personality?
Yeah, nobody shared any, you know, strong thoughts about it, one way or the other not being there. But the players definitely noticed it. Geno Smith told us that, you know, he walked into the auditorium, I think must have been one of the first couple of days of their offseason program, and he said he just kind of instinctively reached for a basketball that was, you know, there's the little basketball rack on the side there, and then realized that it wasn't there. And so it's going to get some, you know, it's going to take some getting used to. I don't know if the removal of the hoop in and of itself is signaling any sort of culture shift, because it sounds like, you know, the word from John Schneider was that Jody Allen, you know, when they were going through the hiring process, like Jody Allen, the one directive that she gave Schneider, according to Schneider, was, you know, maintain the positive culture. So I think there is, you know, there was some question as to whether or not the hoop was going to be around, because it was, you know, a kind of a symbol of the culture they've had. I think it was also very much a symbol of Pete Carroll. And I understand completely why they would take it down, knowing that, yeah, you want to maintain the culture, you want to be loose, you want to have fun. But, you know, the new coach has got to get out from underneath Pete Carroll's shadow. And, you know, he would be literally, that thing would be literally hanging over his head every time he stood at the front of that room and address those players. So there's a balance to be struck there. You want to maintain the culture, but you want the coach to feel like he's running his own show without what would have been, I think, a pretty constant reminder of Carroll and the Carroll era.
Brady, you know, this is that part of the year where, as a, you know, doing what you do, asking these guys questions, interviewing them, a lot of the times you can almost guess what the response is going to be, right? Because I listened to these guys talk, and there's so many just generic responses, but that's what it's going to be because these guys don't know each other. When you're talking to these athletes, what do you think is like the realest thing you've heard so far? Because I've always heard, oh, it's nice, it's refreshing, it's this, it's that, he has a plan. And I try to kind of weed through the generics and try to find just a real comment. Have you gotten one of those yet? Something that you probably weren't prepared to hear or didn't think you were going to hear?
You know, yeah, nothing has really stood out to me. And that is a good point, that you do kind of take the comments with a grain of salt, because, A, you know, that's just a thing that we hear a lot of times is, you know, athletes are pretty guarded in what they say. And I think in this case, you know, they're still getting to know Mike McDonald, and, you know, they've probably only, sat in that room and heard him speak to the entire team, or at least anybody who's there, only a couple times. And so they're still very much feeling him out. I think they're kind of figuring out what the offense and the defense are going to look like too. And not that they would ever, you know, want to reveal the ins and outs of their scheme, at any point, but I think at this time of the year, they're still kind of building it up and trying to figure it all out. So that's my way of saying there wasn't a whole lot to be gleaned from what we heard. Yesterday I was asking those players kind of what their early impressions of McDonald are. I mean, one of the things we heard from Julian Love was that it comes across how smart he is. And I think anybody who has been in any sort of conversation with him, in our case, it's been interviewing him, that definitely comes off, just talking to him. And that was the one thing I think that stood out to me, but there wasn't any sort of enlightening comment that we heard, really any sort of big revelation, because I think these guys are just still getting to know him just like we are.
What do you think about him so far in terms of the qualities that maybe stand out to you early? Whether you think, I know this simplifies it, but is he more a player-friendly coach, old school? What do you think so far?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm still kind of getting a feel for him. I mean, I can only interviewed him two or three times and, you know, just had some brief, just kind of side off to the time with him a couple times, once after he was introduced as the head coach and then again down at the owners meeting. So, he definitely comes across just in an interview setting as pretty intense and kind of buttoned up and no nonsense. It's been my impression that kind of when the cameras are off and the, the microphones are put away, that there is more of a loose side to him, and which I think is going to serve him well. I think you've kind of got to be both when you're talking about standing up in front of a group of, 53 guys or 90 at this point in the offseason. I think you've got to have both of those qualities to you. And it sounds like he does. But I would just, remind people that, because majority of people are only going to hear him in the interview settings. Like, he's definitely got a looser side to him. At least that's been my impression in the limited amount of time that I've spent with him.
For sure. I think I see the same things. And Mike, I want to ask you about Leslie Frazier, though. Have you spoken to him, been around him? And what's his role in this whole thing? I think I have an idea. He's like the consultant. I've done this before. I've been in the league for a while. I'm going to try to nudge you in the right direction. What have you observed with Leslie?
Yeah, so we have not had a chance to talk to him yet. It sounds like we will at some point. But I agree with you. He's going to be doing some coaching, I'm sure, just with his, vast defensive background, a guy who's been a head coach, been a defensive coordinator, been in the NFL for a long time, played in the NFL. He's going to be doing quite a bit of hands-on coaching, I would imagine. But, just as importantly, he is, as you said, I think he's going to be a consultant, kind of like if you're putting it in Godfather terms, he's the consigliere, a guy who has been in the NFL for a very long time, which is very important with the makeup of this staff. When you've got a 36-year-old head coach who's a first-time head coach, all three of your coordinators have never been a coordinator at the NFL level. And, Adam Dirty, I think I said the name right, he's never been a coordinator at any level. And so there's just a lot of youth and inexperience on the coaching staff. And so I think hiring a guy like Leslie Frazier was very important. And he's going to be a pretty important resource just for some of the, things that you run into, as, being new in a role. Like, Mike McDonald's going to run into things that, he's never had to deal with as a coordinator, and things are going to fall on his doorstep that, that's just the way it is when you're an NFL head coach, things that you don't have to deal with in other roles. And so I think Leslie Frazier is going to be a pretty important resource in that regard.
We're speaking right now with ESPN's Brady Henderson. Brady, Bump and I continued our draft profiles today with Tavondre Sweat. We've looked at a couple other linemen, a linebacker, but like many national experts, Bump and I have kind of looked to the trenches first, excuse me, when it comes to the Seahawks. Does your gut tell you that's where they look and that's where John Schneider looks at 16 or around there? Should he trade back?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, you know, this has been one of the least predictable teams in the draft, and so there's always a danger in speaking with any level of confidence in what they're going to do. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason that Troy Fatanu has been seemingly every mock draft you look at, you know, he's there for the Seahawks at 16. He's the guy that people peg there at 16. And I think it's kind of like the perfect marriage of a lot of different things. Obviously, they need a guard, and I do think they're going to sign a veteran guy here within, you know, sometime before the draft. But they could really use a starter on the other side as well. And I think depending on how they feel about just the group of guards in this year's draft, like if they don't really think all that much about the options behind him, and if you feel like you need to come away from this draft with a starter, then okay, if you don't take Fatanu at 16, then are you going to be looking at, you know, fourth and fifth round, you know, guys you have a fourth and fifth round grade on? And can you reasonably expect to draft one of those guys and have him come in and start right away? So, you know, that kind of thinking can sometimes get you in trouble if the alternative is just an okay prospect. But, you know, Fatanu has got, from what it sounds like, he's got all pro potential. That's what a lot of the draft analysts that I've followed have said. So even though he would be moving likely to guard after playing tackle in college. And so I know, I mean, you know, you can't always put all the stock in the world in what a mock draft says, but in this case, I think there's a reason why he has been the most commonly mocked player to Seattle at 16. And I could very much see that on a number of levels. That's to say nothing of, you know, the obvious connection they have with, you know, Scott Huff and Ryan Grubb, knowing him pretty well. And by all accounts, you know, from the scouts that I've talked to throughout or around the NFL, like, he sounds like a very solid dude. And so you would not have to worry about the type of player you're bringing into your building. And from the sounds of it, too, you'd be getting a very, very talented prospect with the all-pro upside.
Brady, I look at that 16th pick, and I see it differently because I feel like four or five quarterbacks are going to be gone by the time it gets to the Seahawks. So to me, that makes that like a number 9 or 10 pick, because I don't think they're in the market for a quarterback with the addition of Sam Howell. You still got Geno over there. Do you think that they are in the market for a quarterback, and is there a move that would surprise you with that 16th pick?
Yeah, well, we've seen them. I mean, there's been reports that they've brought in Bo Nix for a visit, and that they've done the same with Spencer Rattler from South Carolina. So I don't think that, I mean, I haven't really seen Rattler's name connected in the first round as you know, a first round guy. I think that is more on the due diligence. I think you'd file that under due diligence, like, you know, wanting to have all your bases covered on a guy in the event that, you know, maybe he falls to the second round, which is kind of where Rattler has been more commonly projected. And I think, you know, up until recently, I mean, Bo Nix's name has kind of recently made its way into the first round conversation. But for much of the pre-draft process, you know, he was kind of seemingly projected to go in that second round. And so I think they're doing their homework on those guys in the event that maybe one of them falls to them. I don't really see them taking, you can never say never, but I have a hard time picturing them taking a quarterback at 16 after already, you know, having Sam Howell and trading, you know, what I guess amounted to a mid-round pick for Sam Howell. I just don't think that they feel the need to spend that early of a pick on a quarterback. And, you know, maybe they fall in love with one of those guys, but this is not a team that has easily fallen in love with quarterbacks over the years. And I think you could reasonably say that based on the fact that they've only drafted two of them in 14 drafts.
So that I know that Geno has something to prove, but then is your assumption moving forward, like they probably hang on to Geno or have him as the presumptive starter next year as well, and then see what happens with 2026?
No, I think this is a make or break year for Geno Smith.
Okay.
And, you know, look, they've got Sam Howell under contract for 2 years. Geno is under contract for 2 years as well. But, you know, that would be that the cap charge would spike quite a bit. And I think just in a more general sense, like, I don't think this organization is entirely sold on him. And, you know, he had kind of an up and down season last year. There's been some non-committal comments from the organization, you know, from both Mike McDonald and John Schneider. And, look, I don't think it's a coincidence that the first time we heard either of them really commit to him being their starter was, you know, after the Sam Howell trade, which was, you know, a few days into free agency, which was after the most realistic time where you would have traded him. I think there's a reason. I think the reason you didn't hear them make any sort of comment like that is because they were open to the possibility of trading him. I don't think they were ever going to cut him at any point in this offseason. I don't think that was ever really a conversation, but I do get the impression that, you know, they were open to the idea of trading him, and they didn't want to, you know, come out and say that he's their starter and then have to backtrack on that if they did trade him. And I think the reason why you finally heard them commit to him as their starter was, you know, that once free agency started, like, the most realistic window for that to happen had passed. And then they made the trade for Howell, and, you know, eventually you've got to, you know, eventually I think it behooves everybody involved to say that he's their starter and to end that speculation. But, you know, that was after the point at which I think the most realistic window for them to trade him had already passed. And so it was easier to then say that.
He is ESPN's Brady Henderson. Brady, enjoy watching the Masters, as I'm sure Bump will. We'll talk to you later, my friend.
Thanks, Brady.
Okay, thanks for having me. See ya.
Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, Bump. How are Michael Penix and Jaden Daniels alike, and why does one quarterback get their similarity used against him while the other doesn't?
Yeah, this is
I'm so curious about this.
This is a messed up situation.
Okay.
Again, I'm a Coug, but I'm a Michael Penix advocate, and I have been for the last few weeks.
That's true.
Because real recognize real. And we keep hearing about Jaden Daniels. He's a good football player. Over 40 touchdowns, 30 through the air, about, 10 on the ground. But when people are looking to knock somebody, especially Michael Penix, they talk about his injury history. They talk about that game against Michigan. And I don't think you can ignore it either. But then they talk about the receivers that he's been throwing the ball to. Oh, in the Pac-12, he had two All-American type receivers over there. What the heck did Jaden Daniels have over there at LSU? You got Neighbors and Thomas over there. All-American caliber type receivers. Yet nobody talks about that. They just talk about how great Jaden Daniels was for 1 year. Michael Penix has done it twice. He does have All-American type receivers, but no one talks about that with Jaden. Also, Michael Penix had a tougher schedule than LSU. I think they were ranked the eighth toughest schedule, LSU number 14. Michael Penix played in a tougher conference than LSU. I'm not knocking Jaden Daniels. All I'm saying is that when they are evaluating these two guys, you cannot use one argument for one quarterback and ignore that the other quarterback had the same dang thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, though, Jaden Daniels will go before Michael Penix, but the more I talk about him, the more I hear people talk about him, the more I think Penix is going to slowly move up in his draft and make a team very happy.
It feels like with Michael Penix, there's a moving of the goalpost of what the issue is. Like, the issue is and fairly should be the injury history.
Yeah.
Just say that's what it
is.
Just say, I am concerned about the injuries that he has had to his knees, the injury history that he's had, that he has two healthy seasons. But don't keep moving it to where it's like, well, you got to, you know, in the national championship game, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so he was one of two teams that made it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if his season would have ended with the Sugar Bowl after he throws 430 yards and maybe that pass is completed, it's not knocked down, Texas wins, whatever, then he's drafted higher. So
maybe
he's punished for advancing to a game that Bama and Texas couldn't.
And getting beat by the best defensive line in the game.
Truly.
Mm.
It's, yeah, you're right. It's like a moving of the goalpost. Just say it's injuries and leave it at that. Second down. Why was it so important that the Seahawks found a way to keep Tyler Lockett here in Seattle?
It was really important. We just heard some sound from Tyler Lockett, and he just knows who he is, and he's completely fine with it, and he understands his role now. He's been in the game, 9 years, going on 10, I believe. He's only had a few coaches, but he knows that for this team to be successful, he's got to be like the bridge when it comes to the receiver room. I think DK is a more talented receiver, but when it comes to the guy who has the calmest demeanor, who shows up to work every day, not saying DK doesn't, but Lockett is just the elder statesman. He is the Bobby Engram of the Seattle Seahawks right now. Back when I played the game, Bobby was that guy. It's just important to have veterans in that room, that offensive room. You got Tyler Lockett. You're going to have Geno, and you'll sprinkle in. It's probably some guy that I'm missing. That's a veteran that's going to be out there. But then you separate. You get into your playmaker rooms. The receivers lean on Tyler Lockett. And Tyler Lockett doesn't seem like the guy who's going to stand up in front of the room and put together a speech. He's just a guy who's going to say what's on his mind, who's going to give people opportunities, who is going to be the kind of the wide receiver whisperer when it comes to the younger guys. He's just a calming force that I think you need on an offense, especially a new offense with Ryan Grubb over there. It was essential that they got this deal done. I'm happy that they did. Tyler Lockett, go do your thing. Don't get mad at him when he catches the ball and goes down. My man is 30 years old, okay? Leave him alone.
Third down. Who did you doubt at first, but now has you bought in as a starting quarterback in the NFL? I can't wait for this answer.
Yeah, and you know what got me all bought in? Dang X, man. X will get you. X/Twitter. Yeah. And this dude's been putting out videos of him, Aaron Rodgers type throws, and rolling out to his left and looking good. I'm looking at Will Levis like, I don't know, man.
Stop.
I might be buying into what you're selling over there, Will Levis. He did put together some good games, man. And I don't know. That's just, he got me. I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's not his personality. I think it's just the way he's trying new things. He had some great games as a Titan last year. Who knows what they do in the draft? I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback. They've done that 2 years in a row already. I'm looking at Will Levis. I'm saying, look, man, if you can tap into anything that you did last year, you have a division that isn't wide open. You got the Texans who are favored to win him, but you got young quarterbacks in that division. You got CJ, you got Anthony Richardson, you got Trevor Lawrence, and possibly Will Levis. So, yeah, man, it's weird. Sometimes you just get attached, and you don't really know why. And to me, I think it was the videos that I've seen on X/Twitter.
That is so not. I was racking my mind trying to think of the possible names that it could be, and Will Levis was not even top 10, but not even close. Fourth down. What's a running back combination you're looking forward to seeing next year?
We've been known to be attached to the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
It's going to sound like I'm attached to the Tennessee Titans because I want to see Tony Pollard and Spears go 1-2 next year. Tony Pollard getting a fresh start over there with the Tennessee Titans. And then you have Spears, the more scat back, a guy that they doubted coming into the league because of his ACL type of stuff. So, no, I think they're going to run the football, obviously, because you have Will Levis over there. I think he can toss the rock as well. They're probably going to go get a receiver in this draft. You still got Treylon Burks up there who hasn't worked out from Arkansas at that wide receiver spot, but AJ's gone. Maybe he blossoms a little bit. The Titans are becoming an intriguing team for me. You make a move at the head coach spot. You got a new GM a couple years ago. You see them trying. So because I see them trying, I'm intrigued. I see them trying. I see Will Levis at the quarterback spot. I'm looking at Tony and Spears and saying that could be a deadly 1-2 combo. I think they're going to draft a receiver. I don't know. Tennessee might be last year's Houston Texans for me. The secret's out on the Houston Texans, okay?
Yeah.
Now I'm done with them. This year, I'm staying in the division, and I'm going to be looking at the Tennessee Titans.
Man, I love this topic. I'm trying to now think of a team that could go the opposite route, like a team that's going to kind of fade into the background that everyone thinks might really be good. I mean, it was the Bengals last year, but it was because they had Joe Burrow injured and had a number of other injuries. It wasn't because they weren't good as a team. So I'm anticipating that they'll bounce back with a healthy Burrow. Yeah, I don't know. To me, the most volatile team is the Jets in terms of how good or bad they could be. That distance between what their potential final record could be is most vast for me. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud now. Now I'm getting to all kinds of NFL season hypotheticals that we are months and months away from diving into. What I need to know coming your way at 45 after. Get your questions in now to the Mac and Jack's text line. That number, 866-979-3776. Any question, text it now. Head into the station for Hype Train. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Coming up in 45 minutes, it's What I Need to Know. We're answering your burning questions, so send those into the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. Right now, though, we're heading to the station for Hype Train. Let's go. Starting with the Masters. Now, as I said during the break, DeChambeau is leading the leaderboard.
He's in the lead on the leaderboard.
He's in the lead on the leaderboard with the lead. And I'm going to say, minus 7 points. but he is not actually dominating the Masters conversation that I'm going to have here, nor is Scottie Scheffler, who's the favorite to win it all. Instead, this is your very simple hype train. We'll start with you, Bump. Tiger Woods will finish the Masters tournament.
Tigre, por favor. Finish the Masters. I beg you. I know you have a rod in your leg. Okay. I know your back is all jacked up. My dad's back hurts too. Your knee probably hurts. I wake up, I got an icy hot my knee every morning. Tiger, I need you. And he's going to get her done. He's going to answer the call. Tiger Woods, let's go, baby. He might be in the leaderboard with the leaders when it's all said and done after the first day.
Tiger Woods will fit in the leaderboard of the leaders. I'm just going to keep saying that all weekend. He's in the leaderboard of the leaders right now. Tiger Woods will finish the Masters tournament. Are you boarding, Curtis?
If he does, that means he'll have set the record for most cuts made in the Masters. So there's some history on the line. I think he does. Let's do it. Let's board this train. Kind of hoping against what seems to be not an impossible task, but certainly an uphill one for Tiger these days. So I hope he does it, because there's nothing quite like seeing a Sunday final round with Tiger. I wouldn't say he'll be in the hunt, but at least he's out there. So, yeah. I'm hoping.
He's having fun.
He's having fun with his friends.
Make the cut, Tiger. Let's see you on the weekend.
Do I think it will happen? Not necessarily. However, when I look at ESPN's homepage right now, and I know that there's an algorithm targeting it towards me, that being said, I'm assuming most people's algorithm is making them see the front page I am, which is Tiger Woods right on the front. It does not matter what Tiger Woods does. The Masters go as Tiger goes, because he is the most famous golfer in the country. He is the name that even casual in the world, Craig. He is the name that even casual fans that only tune into one or two tournaments actually care about. I mean, more ways to watch the Masters, including Tiger's group as a link. Moments and analysis from Tiger Woods' round as a link. He's on. It's him. He is golf. It's Tiger. And so I really hope it happens. I'll board this train. I'm willing it into existence as well. Next type train into the station, we are going to MLB, and specifically with the Mariners. It's been a quiet start to the season for Julio Rodriguez. He had that amazing walk-off RBI single, and it was really fun. However, this season, in 51 at-bats, he's hitting 196 with 3 RBI, no home runs. He went 0-for-12 against Toronto. That changes tomorrow. When Julio...
He got on base, though, man. Give him that. He got on base.
He did get on base. That changes tomorrow when Julio Rodriguez hits the Mariners' next home run.
44. 2 games ago, he was just squaring that thing up. Just unlucky. Goldie said, can we nerd out for a minute? He goes, look, if you're hitting the ball hard, you're going to bat about 500. My man was hitting the ball hard, and then he kind of tapered down a little bit, but he's going to get back to his old ways. 44 is going to join the squad. All right, he is going to hit a home run.
Will it be the first?
It will be the first.
Okay.
On the third pitch that he sees.
Wow, that's very specific. Remember that just in case. Julio Rodriguez will hit the next Mariners home run. It's an off day today for Seattle. Don't forget to tune in to Extra Innings, hosted by Curtis Rogers, at 7 p.m. And then Julio's going to be up there, presumably hitting number 2. And it's going to be a home run on the third pitch, says Bumps. Curtis, are you boarding this hype train? It doesn't have to be in the first inning, but Julio hits the next Mariners home run.
I would love for it to be in the first inning, but I don't think it's going to be in the first inning. I think it'll be the fourth inning that Julio goes yard, and yes, he will be the next Mariner to hit a home run. We're going to will it into existence, just like Tiger finishing the Masters. It's going to happen. Jordan Wicks is on the mound tomorrow. He's a lefty, so that kind of plays.
I mean, you could go home run list tonight and then maybe do that against.
On Saturday?
Or sorry, I was saying you could go home run list Friday.
I don't want to see them go home run list for an entire game again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done with those kinds of games. You gave me 6 runs in a game. I want more.
All right, let's go with, am I going to go with Jared? I want Julio to hit a home run, and I think he is your best player. I don't care how he started the season, but I'm going to pick someone else for fun. So I'm not going Julio.
Who you
got? Instead, I'm going to go new dad, Ty France. He went 1-for-5, with an RBI double, 0-for-4 the day before. And then, as we know, went 3-for-4 the day prior than that. Pretty solid series against Toronto. He's not really like a big home run hitter, but I don't know. I think he's been one of the hotter players in terms of his start to the season. So why not pick it up and keep it going? I'll go with Ty France. Next type train into the station, Jared Goff spoke with the podcast and said, you know what? I might get in trouble for saying this and maybe I should stop myself, but then he did it anyways. Who among us hasn't been there? And said, the media in Detroit seems to really relish in negativity. Like, they just get so negative. And both you and I said, hey, they've been through a lot of pain. But you know what? I made the hype train fun. He's right. Media relishes in negativity.
He is right. Woo! He is right. They do relish in negativity, especially when they've had 25, 30 years of negativity to relish in. They're used to this. This is what they were brought up in. This is what they know. So, yeah, give them more positive to talk about, and they will talk about the positive. I guarantee you they had great write-ups about Jared Goff and the offense and them moving the football and about how Dan Campbell has changed the perception of that ball club over there. I'm sure they've done all of that. But when you end the season the way that you ended it, that's a sour taste you left in their mouth. If you would have lost the game, it was a battle down to the end, and it was close all the way through, then I think you feel a bit different about what they're saying. But because you tricked it off the way that you did, they will relish in it because that's what they're used to.
Jared Goff is right about this one. The media relishes negativity. And Bump said, you know what? I don't care. He's right. He is right. You can expect that Detroit will be heartbroken. They've experienced heartbreak. And, you know, each media group in each city is going to have a flavor of its own. And you can't really blame him. But he's not wrong. Curtis, are you boarding this hype train?
What leads off every local newscast? It's not lottery winners.
If it bleeds,
it's not puppies.
It leads.
Yeah, it's always bad things that lead off your local newscast. Yeah, Jared Goff's absolutely right. The media does relish in negativity. Yeah, boarding that train with unabashed, reckless abandon. Here we go. Yeah, that's true. It's. Yeah, there's nothing more to be said about it. Like, that's what we do.
I think the media is a reflection of society in a lot of ways. And I worked, before I worked in sports, I worked for a local news outlet where I learned a lot of lessons about that. That whole if it bleeds, it leads thing. Yeah, it's true. Like, there was always a push for clicks. There's always a push for attention. But it's not in a bubble, and it's not on its own. Those articles get clicks because people are kind of morbid sometimes.
Exactly.
It's because people are curious. And because as people, what do we get entranced by? Sometimes sad, tragic stories. We can't turn away. And so what I would love, and again, I'm one of those people. I watch true crime documentaries. I listen to true crime podcasts. I click on the sad article just like everyone else. I guess all you can do is like search out some fun, feel-good stories too, and then remind yourself as someone in media that those are just as important. So Jared's not right. We're all bored. Or Jared is right. We're all bored in this train. My last one is a fun one. I usually try to wrap up with food so it's easy and you guys can have some fun with it and we can go quickly. I need you to open up your mind because I'm not sticking with just dessert. I'm not sticking with just entrees. I'm not sticking with sides. Think of if you were to get one item from a fast food menu, any fast food company. This is where we're going with this. Ready? Blizzards are the best fast food option.
Wow.
Period.
Mm.
Period.
Mm.
In the world, Craig.
In the world, Craig.
We're talking entrees.
I'm talking sides.
And
I am talking any fast food menu from any fast food restaurant. What tops Blizzards? The answer, maybe nothing.
She's clapping her hands, so you know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Any fast food.
Any option by syllable.
Ah, man. Well, you know what? I have to agree with that because I don't. I try not to eat fast food, and when I do, I usually stick to the fries. And I can't think of anything else that's better. I tried the McFlurry. McFlurry, you know, ain't got so many options. But the Blizzard.
They have a million flavors of Blizzards.
I think it is Blizzard. I think it is.
It is. And they just came up with a new flavor. I sound like I'm promoting them. I'm not being paid for this, but I should be. They just came out with a new flavor that's frosted animal cookie.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yes, it does.
Curtis, Blizzards are the best fast food option on any menu anywhere.
I mean,
Bump agrees.
Dessert, yes, 1,000%.
You're
going to
take something over
fast
Blizzard?
Fast food dessert, but I think I'm going to take...
Think
waffle carefully. Waffle fries from Chick-fil-A are so good.
So bad. You would,
so
what would you rather go the rest of your life without having access to? Those waffle fries or any Blizzard?
I can go without a Blizzard. Fries just go with everything, though.
Yeah.
But those specific waffle fries.
Like,
you can get a Frosty.
I think I might take the waffle fries.
You can get a milkshake.
See, that's the thing, is that you can have other forms of ice cream, but like...
You can have other forms of fries.
Not as many other forms of fries.
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know.
It is the best dessert on a fast food menu, 1,000%. They used to have an Oreo Blizzard that had a hot fudge core in it? Like, how do you do that?
Someone said science
can't even fathom that.
253 says, $8 for a Blizzard? Are you kidding me? There's a lot more bang for your buck. Why don't you get a second job and get another Blizzard? I'm just kidding.
Just kidding.
It's an absurd price for a Blizzard. But the point is that I stand Blizzards and I will not back down. Will I take out a mortgage on my home to get more Blizzards? Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I will, but it's worth it. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Get your questions in for What I Need to Know, 866-979-3776.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
What I Need to Know, get your questions in, 866-979-3776. What I Need to Know from Chase in Scottsdale. Is it possible for the Seahawks to trade down in the first round and still get a quarterback and offensive lineman?
What KG say?
Anything is possible!
Exactly. But is it likely?
No! No, it is still likely, but it depends. So here's one random scenario. Taking a guard or tackle first. So if you trade back, Michael Penix and Bo Nix are projected to go in the second and will probably go before you're on the board. So if you start seeing a run on guards and centers, which is expected to happen in the second, then maybe you get that guy first, and then you get like a Spencer Rattler type guy later in the draft is how I would see that scenario happening. So I would flip it. Offensive line.
I need you to read 253. This is right up your alley.
Tomorrow night. This one?
Yeah.
Okay. I love advice columns. Tomorrow night, I'm going to dinner with my wife of 7 years who I've separated from and I'm seeing for the first time in 6 months in an attempt to reconcile. Should I reserve a restaurant that has been a special place to us, a completely new place, or a normal place that I know she likes but doesn't have a special history behind it? Owen, wish me luck, please.
Does she know you're attempting to reconcile?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It has to be a special...
I mean, they're linking up, right? I ain't linking up if we ain't trying to.
It should be a place that means something to the two of you.
New place that means something, though. You've been separated. Start over.
I'll say this. Think about why you guys are separated. And whatever reason that is, I'm assuming there are multiple reasons, don't have one of those play into something she could think about the place you choose, for instance. If one of the reasons that you guys separated is you never listen to places that she wants to go, then book reservations at a place that you know she's always wanted to go to. If one of them is that you don't do sentimental things, then book reservations at a restaurant where maybe you guys had an anniversary dinner before. Or like, hey, this reminds me of a trip we took to Alaska because they have this great salmon, whatever it is.
253 says, yes, she does know.
So they're trying to reconcile together?
Together.
Or are you trying to reconcile with her and she's aware of you trying to make this work again?
Got a lot of questions. Just give them the answer. Hey, go somewhere new, dog.
Somewhere new.
Somewhere new that's special.
I think my advice was great.
Go somewhere new, dog.
Somewhere new that's special. Yeah. Should you go somewhere expensive?
If it's expensive, sure.
Like a Canlis type place?
Sure. As long as it's special.
I need more. Oh, they're trying to reconcile together, says the 253. Yeah. I think this is beautiful. My parents, it's my stepdad. So not my dad. They divorced and got back together. And this is something that works for people.
Like my mom did the same thing.
Exactly. There are people who divorce and they get back together and they realize that they're better together and they just needed some time apart to kind of figure things out or whatever. I am rooting for you guys. Best of luck. Enjoy your dinner. let's see. Now everyone just wanting to know, well, what happened? Why'd you guys separate? What I need more? I need to know more. Someone said, I've never related to a what I need to know more. Separation sucks. Oh, I'm sorry.
Hang in there, Seth.
Hang in there, Seth. We love you, man. Okay, what I need to know. From Ira in Vancouver, Washington. Shout out to the Coov. Will the Mariners start having some plate discipline or continue to keep striking out?
BG hit us with a stat. He says at this rate, the Mariners will strike out 65 more times than they did last year. So I'm going to go out and say they're going to exhibit some plate discipline. Calm that you-know-what down and swing at good pitches.
What I need to know, forget your best golf score bump. What's your worst golf score? Can I guess it?
Sure.
112.
Nah. It was 120.
120.
Whoa. Yeah, but here's my excuse. I just had surgery on my foot, and I wasn't supposed to be playing golf, yet I was playing golf, and I couldn't transfer the weight. It was all bad.
360 says, my advice, don't text a sports station to save your marriage. Hey, 360, mind your business, okay? We've probably saved a lot of marriages.
I've been married 15 years now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have a boyfriend.
My wife and I, we're going on 4 here this year.
I like restaurants.
Also, we're doing a good job, I think, of saving Isaac and his wife's marriage.
Yeah, you're welcome, Isaac and Everett.
From
snake in the grass, Reggie. Who was trying to break them up. And we were honest enough to tell Isaac that Reggie was most definitely hitting on his wife. So we're all in healthy relationships, and we like food. I think that this counts. What I need to know, Curtis, any info on potential guests for tonight? Bump, Home Alone, what's on the menu for watching the Masters?
What's on the menu? I'm probably going to go to my local Mexican restaurant, sit down with my compadres, have a beer, and watch the Masters.
Curtis, any special guests for Extra Innings?
We do have a couple special guests. Wayne Randazzo of Apple TV Plus, he's joining me at 8 o'clock. And then 7:15 for the last time, because Brandon Gustafson is off to greener pastures after tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's our last ride at 7:15, so you got to tune in for that.
Devastating.
Getting emotional thinking about it right now.
I know. 253, the guy who is trying to reunite with his wife, says they're going to Salty's on Alki because it's a special place for us.
It's a new special place.
No one took my advice.
It's a new special place.
Sentimental place.
Carter from the 253 says, start fresh, 253. Go get the new frosted animal cookie blizzard.
All right, you guys, that'll do it for us today. We'll be back with you tomorrow, and so will the Mariners. You got Extra Innings tonight at 7. For Michael Bumpus, Curtis Rogers, Matt Nelson, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere.